What's up, Food Podcast, with Felipe Esparza and Rodrigo Torres.
Yeah, man.
Rodrigo Torres will have the show March 16th, right?
17th at the Ontario Improv. It's going to be a kick-ass show. Armando Cosillo, Flaco, if he's still alive by then. Chris Doran, dog.
It's the St. Patrick's Day afterwards?
It's that day. It's 17th.
Chris Doran's coming?
Yeah, if he's coming down.
Check it out.
And we got
staying PK. In your house or what?
Yeah. Full fucking
PK?
And PK hosting.
Time to bring those shrooms, bro.
He has a hookah ball. Oh, we'll see, dude, what's up.
What's up, damn, man?
Time to bring I'll some. Get you a little bag, too.
Hell yeah.
Ontario Improv. Please come out, man. Support, man. It'll be kick-ass.
What's up, fool? We're right here, man. Chilling, man. How was your weekend?
The weekend was cool, dog. And, you know, in and out, dude. Doing a little spot. And then I didn't even know I had a show on fucking Super Bowl. So other than that, it was cool.
I had a day. I went to the dentist, man, and they put that... replace that molar, so they put the little
anchor. So they just put the anchor in right now, and you're gonna wait till that heals, and then put the molar in, so it can be looking smooth.
Yeah, man.
Be like those fools that have that molar missing when they smile, huh, fool?
I want to see that doctor. I want to punch his ass, day.
Why, fool?
Because he was supposed to replace the front teeth, you know, instead of me having this cool ass grill that this Colgate smile. I was supposed to get permanent veneers, you know.
Right.
But then he said that yeah, man, your gun wouldn't take.
Well, what didn't they tell you that in the beginning?
I know. I was going to ask him that, man.
So then what's up?
So I'm going to get another permanent. I'm going to have another replacement, but it's going to look good. It's going to look like permanent teeth.
Or this time they're going to do it all the way, or they're going to fucking start bullshitting again.
Yeah, man. So years and years of crack smoking just killed all my teeth.
Do you think, were you flossing and all that shit, brushing every day, like three times a day before?
Yeah, bro, I was flossing with a, if I was smoking crack near a towel, I'd just pull a little string, bro. Yes. Oh. Fool, I'm one of those people, man, that flosses with anything they can find, man. Like, if you hand me a business card, I'm probably going to pick my teeth with it.
Yeah, that other day at the hotel, I was like, dude, get the soft shit. You don't feel nothing, dog, because fuck, that shit cuts me up, that string, dog. Ugh, get all bloody, dog.
I know, man. I remember when I was a kid. Remember, I don't know when you were a kid in elementary school, or they teach you how to brush your teeth, or you have one day of hygiene. Health, yeah. Hygiene, and they teach you how to floss and how to, did they ever give you that pill, like a red pill you take to find out if your teeth are dirty?
No.
You remember that pill?
At the pool for
Jimmy,
what?
Remember it, bro. He's old school.
Oh, fuck. Hey, there he is. Jimmy.
What was that pill called?
I don't know, but it was pink.
Yes, it was a pink pill.
Fuck?
Yeah, bro. Me and Jimmy, we're old the school. Matrix, bro. So it was a pink pill, and you take it, and if you have plaque, it'll just highlight your plaque. Fool, I came home, that fucking red shit didn't come off, dog. I'm walking home with fucking bloody teeth.
Are you serious?
Yeah, my mom said, ¿Qué te pasó? What happened to you? Somebody punched you? I told you to shut up, you know? My mom, whenever I got hurt, my parents never asked me, are you okay? Are you okay was never the first asked question, man. Who did you piss off?
What'd you do?
Did you open your big mouth again? I told you, man, fucking run that thing to get you punched. So it was all red from that red pill. You never got it?
Nah, fool. I was tripping out when you told me right now, dog. It was like, dude, this is how broke my fucking, I don't know, super broke, but the principal came in there and said, if you don't have a toothbrush, just put a little toothpaste on your finger and brush your teeth with your finger, dog. That's how broke
that
it
shit
was.
Don't work, bro.
And then one time they gave us floss, fool. I took that shit home and my mom made me throw it away, dog.
Oh, really?
Because he's like, what are you putting shit in your teeth for? It's like this, fuck.
She don't know nothing about flossing.
But fool, she's like, if you're born with good teeth, you should have, your teeth should be good always.
It's like, at my house, fuck, we dude? Never had floss, fool.
But we didn't get to a high school, dog.
I remember, man, like sometimes I'll be at a party and I see my aunts or somebody flossing like in the living room.
After they ate, fool?
After they ate. That's nasty, dog.
Look at that fucking
meat. I know, and then like you can see there's meat and blood coming out.
To me, floss
that
was
fucking
amazing.
Gross, man.
Sick.
I don't like people who floss in front of me. I don't like fucking people clipping their toenails.
That's bathroom shit.
Like, right? I went on the road with this comic at the Comedy Condo in San Antonio.
Do tell.
And this fool was fucking clipping his toenail in the living room watching TV, bro.
And they fly.
I fucking fly up to the, I'm eating soup, man. Fucking toenail flies in my soup, probably.
Fuck
never
that,
noticed
dog.
That shit.
Yeah, that's strictly bathroom shit, dog.
Yeah, but I remember being at parties and people just flossing away, bro. Like right next to me, like, dude,
having a
just,
floss party.
Hey, bro, go fuck in the bathroom and floss over there and come back with a fresh minty's breast smell. But I'm the fool fucking flossing next to me. Like one of my uncles, ah, ta pinche carne está buena. Tengo carne en mis dientes.
Well, sometimes you pull out mean little chunks, huh?
Yeah, man. When I used to, when I first saw Dumb and Dumber, I didn't lie, the first one, that's when I first realized, oh, people floss, actually floss.
When all that shit came out of his teeth?
Yeah, when all that shit came out of Jim Carrey's mouth when he was flossing and Dumb and Dumber, I thought that was like, nah, it's gross. No, Kingpin.
Oh, shit.
Remember he was flossing and all those fucking chunks of meat flying in the refrigerator?
Ugh, dude.
I thought that was just in movie, but that really happens in real life,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, fool, you, dude, you shit gets stuck in there, dog. That's why the fools get those weird blue and black teeth and ugh. Because that shit will rot in there, dog.
That was what the doctor was telling me, that when you have really, really bad teeth like Flaco, you know, or somebody with or a crackhead, you know, or anybody like that, it, whatever disease or gross shit you have in your mouth, it goes all the way to your stomach, and then you have bad teeth and bad toes now.
Supposedly that's the beginning of it, right? It starts from your teeth and then spreads.
So if you have bad teeth out there, man, this week, man, don't buy an Aether. Don't get a 40-ouncer. Go get your Obamacare or whatever dental care you have. And I told my kid, one of my kids, right? He was sick. He wanted to go to a dentist. Wanted me to pay. I said, fuck that, man. I said, you go to the county hospital, general hospital. You get there at 5 in the morning and you stand in line like everybody else. And you fucking apply for dental, okay? Because, man, a person needs to take care of their own teeth, but you can't have the one pay for it and shit.
And that shit's expensive, dog.
It's expensive.
It's expensive when you don't take care of your teeth and then you go in there with a real problem. Dude, Mindo said $3,000 for a crown, dog.
For a crown?
Yeah, dog.
Fuck, with the crown of Elizabeth? we get the crown of England, bro, of Spain?
The thing is, he's older, I think, and the fact that he's diabetic, so they have to
He's diabetic?
Yeah.
And he's doing his tortillas, huh?
Yeah, they're good, eh?
I know I'm worried about diabetics since we had Corey Holcomb over here. We had a lot of listeners. Oh, bro, I'm worried.
Some listeners got diagnosed.
I was worried about, bro. I was peeing 14 times a day. So I went to a doctor. He said I have a back spasms or some kind of fucked up back. So the fucked up back was causing him to pee a lot. So he took care of it, bro.
Yeah. And
he would have never known.
Dude, let me tell you, fool, it's so true. But we don't know because fucking dick. We don't know. I mean, how many people do you know since I've known you that fucking, I went to the doctor, got checked out, everything's fucking cool?
Only Joe Diaz, bro. 50.
Remember when I had that little ball on his shoulder, dog? Well, I had to cut that fool out.
I was tripping last night, right? I was just in my. You were like, be laying down in bed, and then all of a sudden you just start busting up about something you thought about.
Oh hell yeah! Well, that's I always do a long that time, shit,
fool. True story, dog. You know how Big Dog, and you guys know who Big Dog is. You know how Big Dog is always trying to bag on your ass or trying to be funny, like in front of other people just to make himself look cool.
Yeah, but he kind of get a little.
You know those assholes, man, that they, like, they're your friends, but they decide to just make fun of you when people who don't know you around.
They don't want to see you shine, huh?
Yeah.
Dog?
They want you to be cool, right? They want you to be cool and shit, right? So this fool always do that, right? Like, he'll make fun of me or, you know, get a quick little laugh, whatever, right? You know, but not in a friendly way. Like when I bag on you, you know, you're gonna laugh too, right? But I don't do it constantly. But this fool like does it, like to the point where, man, is this fool serious? Does he hate me?
And to turn you down?
Yeah. So we're in an elevator, right? At the, I don't know where we're at. Probably leaving an audition or the mall somewhere, the Beverly Center, and then we were in there with fucking a bunch of yuppies. I guess they were yuppies. They had suits on, and this fool busted out a joke. And those fucking dudes in the elevator were busting up, bro. Just looking at me, busting up over what he said.
Being fool, the butt of the joke and shit.
I bitch slapped that motherfucker in the elevator. I forgot I bitch slapped that motherfucker, dog.
And what happened, fool?
I bitch slapped him hard, like a smack in the face.
Like a perfect one?
And I said, and then I told him, what are you going to do, man? You're going to do nothing, man. And if you motherfucker keep laughing, I'm going to fucking fuck you guys up, too. And I stopped the elevator, bro.
You just snapped, fool, huh?
Yeah, man. I just snapped.
Just comes a point where you just can't take everybody's bullshit no more, dog.
Yeah, I just snapped, bro. And I was tired of him, bro. You're like all the time trying to be funny, you know, in front of his, like he'll bring his friends over that didn't know me. Then they keep making fun of me and bagging on me, you know, and I had to break my hand the way Blake Griffin broke his hand on the fucking equipment guy. Fool, I found out what happened.
What happened?
They said that they're having a teasing contest.
Okay.
You know, white reporter don't know how to write bagging. You know, man, let me tell you, man. I don't care, man. When you have a job where you're the biggest with a hierarchy and there's a small motherfucker like scrubbing tables, that's a funny motherfucker you don't want to fuck with, bro. He has nothing to lose. So I just want to know what the hell did he tell Blake Griffin so good that made him want to bucket break his hand over his head?
I don't know. Did he find out?
No, I want to know what he said. Because they were having a teasing contest. So, you know, they were bagging yeah, each other.
That shit's hardcore under wraps right now.
Yeah, so they were, like, eating together. What can he possibly say, bro? Because this guy's an equipment manager, bro. He fucking pretty much passes out water and napkins and towels.
Those fools know a lot of the underworld, dude.
He must have said something personal that only him and him know. Because that's what really it is, man, when your homie bags on you, when you're bagging with a homie, and you're begging hard, dog. Because I've seen it, man. That, you know, when black comedians do it and Latino comedians do it. White comics don't do it too much, man, because they get their feelings hurt. But I seen people get degraded, dog. So getting back to the elevator, dude. So this fool said a joke that was kind of like a Mexican joke. So those two white guys laugh, and then there's two Latinos. So I'm thinking, this motherfucker is making a Latino joke at my expense for these guys. So I said, fuck that, dude. I just got tired of him, and I bitch slapped that motherfucker in the elevator, dog. Like hard, bro. One of those Michael Corleone, bro, in Godfather 2. Michael, why would it want another son, another evil? It had to stop right here. And it was a boy. And I know that with the Catholic thing and the Sicilian thing, you will never forgive me. And then smack, bro. That's the kind of smack. Not too hard, you know, not as hard like that, but, you know, just enough to, so the whole world could hear and you can just feel it after. So he let I thought it was over right there. You know, he let it go, whatever. Hey, man, I'm sorry I had to slap you like that, bro. You were out of line, man. And considering, you know, it was friendly. So he let it go. You know, let me tell you, man, somebody slapped me, I ain't gonna let that shit go in front of public. So we're doing the comedy show, and this food loaded, bro, drunk.
Is this in New York?
It's in Montebello.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, I'm always driving him around because, you know, he gets loaded. So I'm driving his car, right? And he goes, man, don't you ever bitch slap me ever, motherfucker. So this fool starts to choke me while I'm driving,
but you're
bro.
Driving.
I'm driving. So I'm like, I'm swerving. We're going to fucking crash. We're going to hit a car, right? So he's fucking trying to strangle me. What the fuck? So I said, you know what? It's not my car. So I ran over a newspaper stand. Right there on Beverly by Carl's Jr. And then I hit another one. Yeah. With the newspaper little machine, right? The dollar one. And then I said, motherfucker, when we get to Denny's, I'm gonna fucking kill your ass, dog. Just fucking let me just get to Denny's, motherfucker. That fool says, dude, he's banging, pull over now. You know, like trying to make a scene, pull over now. I said, hell no, man, I'm gonna get pulled over here. I'm getting no ride home. So Gabriel Iglesias was waiting for me at Denny's. So when we get there, I said, man, if you come out of the car, it's going to be trouble, man. If I was you, I'd just stay inside the car for a little while till shit comes down. So then he's not inside the car. He's outside the window while I'm eating doing karate moves,
you're
bro.
You're fucking lying.
No, he's doing karate moves, and he's trying to pick a fight with another fool that was there laughing, bro. I'm going to fuck that. I'm going to fuck you up. You know how it is, bro, when you're like getting your ass beat, you know, and some people are just fucking with you. So you just said, you know what, fuck that day. I'm going to fuck with the equipment guy. So, dude, I don't know. He ended up coming inside the Denny's, and we squashed it, of course. Everything was cool. Of course, later on, he snapped again, you know, but it wasn't that bad. What's up, fool? We got our guest here, Ali Roy.
Ali
What's
Leroy.
Up, man?
What up, brother?
Ali Leroy.
I like how you just, like, it's like one syllable, my whole name. It's four syllables in my name, but you turned it into like one.
Because the whole week I was hearing your name, I was hearing the Beastie Boy song.
Hey, what's up, Leroy? Yo, Leroy.
What's up, fool?
The best movie slap, the Corleone slap was good. The best movie slap is in Internal Affairs with Richard Gere and Andy Garcia.
Oh, yeah.
All right, so there's a scene. So Richard Gere is a dirty cop, right? Andy Garcia is trying to figure out what the fuck's going on, right? Andy Garcia's got his beautiful wife, Nancy, something is her name, 80s chick, curly hair,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
he's pretty. Right? Right? So Richard Gere has convinced Andy Garcia that he fucked her.
Yeah.
Right? And so then Andy goes and talks to her. He's down on his knee, right? He's in a restaurant. All right. He got her panties. Richard Gere gave Andy Garcia her panties. I forget where he got them from. So he sat down in the restaurant. He goes, I need you to answer a question for me. Did you see this dude? She's like, I don't want to answer no question. I need you to answer this question for me. Just tell me where you went to. Don't get in my business. Were you following me? I need you to answer this question. You know how the calmer a guy gets, the harder the fuck you going to get hit?
Yeah.
Right. So he's calming it down. He goes, one more time. I need you to tell me if you were with this dude today.
I didn't tell you. Whack!
Across the table. All she's knocked the fuck across the table. She's laying down on the floor. Ah! They pull her. You motherfucker! You motherfucker! I tell you, motherfucker! It's like, this is the best slap in movie history. Way better than the Corleone slap. And yet Garcia was in Godfather Part 3. He did not slap anybody, though.
It was a good slap, bro. It was a good slap, bro. Because, man, Richard Gere was in that movie. It's called Internal Affairs. He's a fucking dirty-ass cop, bro. He's sleeping with all his baby mamas.
Everybody.
And he's sleeping with everybody. Then it's just fucked up scene, bro. Like, that's for, like, as a man, you start questioning, man, every person you're around, you're like, right? Your woman, like, you're watching Richard Gere just easily fuck these guys' late wives, and then you're there on a date, you're looking at your wife, and what's this evil bitch up to right now? So there's a scene where Richard Gere's going to make a deal with a dirty politician guy, right? And his wife is sitting next to him, and this fool puts his hand under the table, and his finger banging his wife the whole time they're talking.
God damn.
Yeah,
he's,
man.
He's not a good guy.
And then he takes his finger off like this, and then he shakes that guy's hand.
Damn, dude.
And then, spoiler alert, he catches them both, and he's having sex with her, and he's fucking her in the ass, bro. And this fool, like, he wants to make the deal so bad, he just kills her, not him.
There's a lot of ass fucking and references to ass fucking in the movie.
Damn, it's eternal, huh?
It's hardcore, bro.
Just so, you know, if you want to go see something this weekend at your house.
I'm going to check that shit out.
Internal Affairs.
So what's up, man? Can we just have kidney problems?
I was like that.
You're helping them apply to Obamacare?
I should have said that shit. But it's like, I may die soon. I'm like, God, I hope you don't die right now. It's tough out there, bro.
Yeah, what are we talking about, man? What are we doing here?
We were talking about.
There was a lot of violence. You were driving up on the curb. You were getting choked.
Now we're talking about this comedian, man, that he was on a line one time. Never happened to you see beefs, right?
Yeah.
You know, they get settled. I think it was settled. It was settled that night when they tried to choke me on the way home. Yeah, man, I was driving this guy's car, and then he got pissed off over something that happened at 3 in the afternoon that should have been settled at 3.
Choking is even more personal than stabbing.
Yeah.
Like stabbing, like you got a weapon and you think, this motherfucker needs to die. I will stab him. Choking is like, I don't even have a weapon, but this motherfucker still needs to die. What do I have? I'm going to just try to squeeze the life out of your body. I can't even waste the time to go get a weapon. Fuck that. You need to die right now. I'm going to try and kill you. That's the most personal form of killing.
I know, especially when you're looking straight at him, you know? I never happened to me, but you're looking at him.
It's slightly less offensive if you look away. If you're choking a motherfucker and you're just looking at other shit, like, that's bad, but you look right at him. It's like, eh.
What's the best choke you ever seen, bro, on a movie?
Oh, damn, dude.
David Carradine. Nah.
A fucking choke?
Mine was blood. American Me, bro, when that Mexican mafia member has to kill his brother.
Little Puppet?
Little Puppet, bro.
American Me, also ass fucking.
Yeah, man. And then a horrible plastic knife.
Right. It was not pleasant.
That's crazy, man. What did you know?
If ass fucking could be less pleasant, it with a plastic knife.
That's why I never drink with strange men, bro. That guy makes messed up drinking with those strangers in the kitchen, bro. And the girls are going to be here. He's all fucked up already. Where's the girls? You're the girl. What the fuck?
You're in prison, dog.
Well, that's a change of events. Imagine, what would you do, bro, if you were the girl?
Fuck that. I'd just be choking the fuck out of motherfuckers. What are you going to do? You're going to die and get fucked in the ass anyway.
It's hard, bro, because they're holding you. They're holding your arms, and you're trying to fight it, bro. They're busting your ribs open, bro.
Is that the whole thing?
For your butt to open up.
You know what's so fucked up about American Me? When he tried to have regular sex, but it wasn't working.
Had a flipper over.
He's like, shit.
You'd be locked up for so long. Fuck.
He couldn't have sex with her, bro, and lived with a cigarette exchange.
First he flips over, then he's like, put this on. Gives a blue shirt. Hold on, I need to cut your hair.
Hold on, I can't have sex with you unless I'm watching somebody coming with a compact mirror.
Man, get institutionalized, man.
So what's up, man? We have a guest here, man. Writer, director, showrunner, producer, Ali Roy. What's up? What?
Ali.
No. This is good, though. This is good, though, because, like,
he just... I was calling him that when I first met him.
He just takes both the L's and just, look, there's too much time. Let's just put those together.
Conjunction.
I'm all right, because this is a funny brother right here. I like
what's up, man? This guy, I work with him on the Arsenio Hall show.
Yep.
Oh, hell yeah.
The man in the streets.
Yeah. So here's what it was. So, like, we had to go down... we went out to Sandy Alley, right?
Yeah, the callejones, the alleys.
Right. So, you know, like... I've been doing that sort of bit. Like, I started doing with Chris Rock years ago when we was doing with HBO. You know, so this man on the street shit. The thing is, if you can't talk to people, you're fucked. Right? So I'm like, I don't speak Spanish. Arsenio don't speak Spanish. But these are where the fucking people are. Like, Sandy Alley, East LA, that's LA's version of Harlem. Right? Because that's where we used to go when we was with Chris Rock. Like, that's where the real fucking people are. That's where people are who, you know, $10 still fucking matters to them.
Hell yeah.
You know, that's some people where, you know, a fucked up cell phone bill is still some shit that they really got to deal with. I forget what the bit is we were even talking about when we got down there. But I really needed him to come down and, like, be our little intermediary. Because it's one thing if, you know, we don't want to make fun of people. You know, this shit can't be about here we come and we're the cool fucking guys with the, you know, Arsenio. We got our little TV show and shit. And then people feel like you're making fun of them. Because if that's what it is, this shit ain't going to work. So we got to bring somebody that's like, okay, can you be our intermediary? Can you talk to these motherfuckers for us? And at least make them feel like, okay, they at least respect us enough to come down here with somebody that's one of us. So that was my man. He did a great job. His man.
Hell yeah.
We're asking a bunch of questions, bro. Like, who would you vote for president?
Obama.
George Lopez.
Right. Oh, that's right. It was the president.
Yeah, George Lopez. George Machete.
Right. Everybody fucking loved Machete.
That was another one, too. Yeah. Oh, okay. It was a stereotype about Latinos. Like, who put you carry hot sauce in your purse, and it was a girl with hot sauce in her purse.
Is that so? That's Mexican women and Beyonce.
Yeah,
the hot sauce.
We carry Tapatio in our purse.
Tapatio, and what's the other one?
Red Rooster.
Red Rooster.
No,
Louisiana.
No. Cholula.
Cholula. They came around later.
No, not Cholula.
Cholula.
In the name of putting all the L's together.
Isn't that big, fat, ugly one everybody drinks now?
That's an old school one. That El Valentino.
El Valentino.
All right. So Tapatio, that's the main one.
Yeah, that's a mad popular one out here.
Right.
Were you ever a stand-up?
Yeah, man. I did stand-up for 15 years out of Chicago.
Chicago?
Yeah. That's why I'm born and raised in Chicago.
So were you part of that big comedy boom at that club?
All jokes aside?
Yeah.
I had a lot to do with All Jokes Aside.
Tell us about it, man. I saw the documentary, man. I heard it was hot.
I'm in it.
Yeah.
You didn't see it.
I did see it.
You didn't see
it. I don't remember faces.
Oh, I'm different. Motherfucker.
I just remember the main guy. Melanie Camacho. Mercia's in it for 5 minutes.
Yeah, I'm in there.
We had one Latino at our club.
I know, right?
Him and Juan Villarreal.
Nah, it was cool, man. It's like it started out as something little, then it got really fucking big. It got hot. You know, I mean, it was really like on a Friday, Saturday night, downtown Chicago, like, you know, it's 8th Street right off of Grant Park. Man, I mean, when you're talking about the lines around the block, it's the fucking hottest ticket in town. You know, we had great, great, great acts there. It was just really exciting. Like, it was like some shit was happening. You really felt like you were part of something. But then, you know, Raymond's story just ended up being, you know, he had all the trouble with the city and all that shit. But, yeah, man, I mean, you know, Steve Harvey, Bill Bellamy, Cedric the Entertainer, Melanie Camacho's in there. The house MC was George Wilborn. So he's on the radio in Chicago now, at least I think he was.
George Wilborn had that bit, I'm here to relieve stress.
Right. George just did a bit in Spike Lee's Chirac. He was in that movie just recently. And my man, it was Bernie Mac. You know.
Give some Bernie Mac, bro.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So me and Bernie like, were tight from, you know, we were tight from way back. So when I was doing stand-up from about 90, maybe like 90 to about 96, I was on the road with Bernie Mac. Before that, I did sketch shit. I was out in L.A., you know, just out on the road, all, you know, just
Mary Wong comedy team.
Yeah,
right?
Your Mary Wong comedy team, right?
Lance Crowther.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's
man.
Before the stand up.
Oh yeah, and that was
out of high
first.
School?
That was out of high school. We started that in about 1980. So we toured as different variations of a group because you have a group and you can't keep groups together. Right. So we had a 5-man version of it. We had a 4-man version, a 3-man version. We had 4 different 3-man versions of Mary Wong.
So it could be replaceable when somebody couldn't make it?
No, there was a fight.
Oh, okay.
So at different points in time.
Who was in it?
Different guys. So at the time, it was myself. Lance Crowther was really like the heart and soul of the group.
He's Pootie Tang, right?
Hell yeah.
Yes.
He had a bit. I saw him one time. He had a bit about it was funny, dude. I only seen him one time at this open mic, Natural Fudge. I saw him. He said, oh, what the fuck is the joke? He goes, oh, man, I kept getting my ass kicked at school all the time.
Right.
And my dad said, well, motherfucker, if you fucking get your ass kicked one more time, you're going to have to fight me. So, man, the next day, man, I'll beat the shit out of my dad. He said, motherfucker, right. I told your ass.
Yeah, first time
he did hilarious, that. Dog.
He did that bit on TV as a stand-up. Comic Justice, you remember?
Justice? I love that show.
AJ Jamal.
AJ Jamal first, and then because it was whatchamacallit's manager. Sinbad was the producer, and Mark Atkins was a producer also. Yeah, AJ Jamal was the fucking host of Comic
Justice.
Dude,
there's this comedian we call the Devil that was on that show. Oh my God, people! If you guys could, I think it's Jeff Garcia. He did the show. You gotta see him. He's probably the youngest comic on that show. He's probably 17 or 18. Dude, he's dressed like Andrew Dice Mexican.
Right. And then a leather jacket.
He has a leather jacket on.
A pump.
Like, he looks like Chachis, bro. He looks like Scott Bales. If he was dying of AIDS, you know? I mean, he was wearing a leather jacket, bro. Hey, Doc. And he's wearing big.
Right.
Yeah, big old fucking Harley Davidson boots, bro. No motorcycle.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, maybe he was dressed like NWA. No, he was dressed like Eazy-E and NWA with the prison coat and those fucking boots, bro. All poser style.
Man, yeah, shit. That was back in the day, man.
You were a producer of the show?
On that one? No. We did, when we were on Comic Justice, we wrote sketches and shit like that for the show. And we performed in the sketches. And then at some point, Lance did stand up on the show. I may have, but I actually don't remember whether I did stand up on the show.
No, Comedy Central, right?
It may have been the early Comedy Central or late Comedy Channel. A lot of people don't remember the Comedy Channel.
I don't.
I rented that thing on VHS.
Yeah, because it was two Comedy Channels. It was Ha and the Comedy Channel, and they became Comedy Central. That's like, yo, you don't remember?
Nah, I don't.
Yeah, dude, it was two comedy channels, Ha and the Comedy Channel, and they became Comedy Central.
Comedy Channel, Northern Canada, probably.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just saying, man. Yeah, but I go back.
I started my first TV credit was in 1996.
Oh, fuck you, man. What was you on in 1996?
I was on Jeff Valdez Latino Comedy Festival on Showtime.
Look at you. Yeah, we were on
with Paul Rodriguez hosting.
We were just starting up with Chris's show in New York at the HBO show. We did the pilot for that in late 95, I think. Was it late 95 or 96? It's hard to fucking remember now. And then we actually went on the air with the series proper in, I think it was the spring or something, 97, something like that.
I used to watch the Chris Rock show.
And was that already in the works after he did Bring the Pain?
It went into the works after he did Bring the Pain. That's when they started putting that deal together to, that's the way I understand it. But yeah, Bring the Pain was first.
Were you with Chris Rock when he was doing his routine, Bring the Pain?
When he was working on the material that would, that would become Bring the Pain, Chris was actually my manager for you.
Chris Rock?
Yeah, Chris Rock was the manager of Mary Wong for like a year.
Oh,
you guys opened that tour, right?
Was there a female comedian that used to hang out with you guys? Light-skinned lady, very funny.
You're talking about Robin Montague?
Robin Montague, yeah. I used to see her in L.A. a lot when I first started.
Yeah, Lance and Robin were married.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, they didn't want you to know.
She was funny, man, because she was like, you know, she had her own style, you know? Very, like, she could play the best crackhead.
Right.
Yeah, and the best, like, you know, ex-lady.
Yeah. Yeah, that,
she had her own character. What happened? She's still around?
Oh, yeah. She's out in New York. She's doing stuff. Yeah, that version of the group was myself, Lance,
in LA,
Robin
right?
Montague. Yeah, we were out here, and a guy named Tim Miller, who's back in Chicago now. Yeah, so it was all, that's what I'm saying, all kinds of different permutations. And, yeah, we were working with Chris then. Because I met Chris in 85 when he was like doing fucking late sets at, you know, what's the not
Stand Up New York?
No, not Stand Up New York. What's the
Carolines?
Yeah,
Gotham's.
Yeah, and we used to do fucking Dangerfields. We were over there. What was Lucian's Club? Not the Cellar.
The Stand Up New York.
No, Eastside. I can't fucking remember the names of the club now. There was Catch. We used to do Catch.
Talking about Lucian, the guy who passed away.
Lucian Hole. Yeah,
yeah, it was skinny guy.
Yeah, yeah.
With a beard.
I can't.
I think it was Stand Up New York.
That's how, no. That's
Stand Up Live.
No,
Comedy Stop. Like, I met him one time.
Just name them all. Why the fuck is the most? It's the Strip.
The comic strip.
Yeah.
Oh, the New York Comic Strip.
Yeah. The Strip. Right. Like, why can't I remember any of this? It's been so long.
They have a dark alley when you go in through the back of the stage there.
I haven't been in a club performing in 20 years.
Damn.
Yeah. Well, because when I came, the last round of stand-up that I was doing, I was on the road with Bernie. So we were in theaters for 6 years, right? So the last time I did stand-up in a club on a regular basis was like 89 or 90. Then it was like 6 years of touring theaters and, you know, venues like that with Bernie. And then after that, I came out of that and went into Chris's HBO show. So, you know, a lot of cats, when they go, stand, you did stand-up? Yeah, it's like, it's fucking 20 years ago. They all know me from writing now. So I just transitioned, man.
And when I remember, go for it.
I remember a sketch on Chris Rock that was hilarious, man. I still was, they're talking to the guy from Pootie Tang.
Right.
He's in a little monitor.
Right.
And they're talking about violence in sports. And he's like, I think he's locked up in prison.
Right.
And he asked him, man, so you're saying that sports affected you and you're in prison right now? Yeah. When I say motherfucker turn a hockey game off, I mean it. So what happened? What happened was why I'm here. Did it turn the motherfucking hockey game off?
Oh man, we had some fun shit on that show. That was a fun show, man. You know, we had some good people on that too. Yeah, because it was myself, it was Lance, of course. Wanda Sykes was on that show. Louis C.K. was there. It was Jeff Stilson. He went on to produce like Ali G and the Osbourne shit like that. So it was a pretty solid group of people, man. You know, I mean, it's one of those things where you look back and you almost can't believe I was in a room with all these motherfuckers on a weekly basis. Like, yeah, man, it's kind of fucking fly. It's really cool, man.
Hell yeah, dude.
So were you there at that Def Jam taping where everybody getting booed off and Bernie Mac was the only one that killed?
No, he.
I heard about that.
Have you heard the story though?
No, I want to know.
All right,
I know it was in L.A., right?
So no, that was in New York.
Oh, okay. I thought it was L.A.
No, that was in New York. And basically the story is it was just one of those nights because you know there's nothing that a fucking New York crowd loves doing more than booing you the fuck off the stage, right? They're yeah. like, this is going to be fantastic. We're going to go crush some people's careers tonight, right? They love that shit.
No shot.
between the Apollo and that whole, you know, I mean, it's like, even at the Apollo, they created the boo you off aesthetic. You know, there's like that whole shit is, hey, we came here to boo motherfuckers, right? Like, you gotta be so amazing for us to fucking let you slide. You know, or you gotta talk about God or children. That's the only fucking thing that doesn't get booed. God and kids. They will not boo it. But everything else, you know, you get booed. So then when they got the Def Jam, it's like, well, take that and fucking multiply that times 10. It's like boo and fuck you. They can add that to it. So it was one of those nights, and Bernie said that, you know, a couple of people were doing okay. Martin Lawrence was the host, right? And he said that on that night, the guy that went out, I forget the comedian, the guy that went out in front of him, they fucking ripped him to shreds. Went out, did his shit. They booed the whole fucking thing, right? And then Martin brings out Bernie. When Bernie comes out and he's saying, I ain't scared of you motherfuckers, that's not a joke. He's telling the truth. Because he saw what just happened. So when he comes out, he does his joke. And you don't understand. I ain't scared of you motherfuckers. It's like, that's a very real thing. Because for him, he's a guy going, I came here from the south side of Chicago. This is my fucking lifeblood. I'm here to fucking get my life going. I'm here to get my career going. And the last thing I'm going to let you happen is for you motherfuckers to boo me off the stage. They'd never seen that before. Nobody ever called a New York audience on their shit and basically said, fuck you. I'm doing my act. That's what he did. That's why they fucking loved him. He stood up to him and he was funny. That was the other part. You can't stand up and then fucking, you know, and then girl fight. He had to come with the Andy Garcia slap on the ass. Oh, yeah, man.
I ain't scared of you, man. I got my face on my pants.
Hell yeah, dog. How long was Bernie doing stand-up at that time?
At that time, so that was fucking early. That was mid
94?
Yeah. He had probably been doing stand-up in the 10 to 12-year range at that point. Yeah, because Bernie used to work around Chicago, and he never got in, like, the main rooms, right? So there was a club called the Funny Firm that didn't book him. There was Zany's that did not book him. At a different point, Catch a Rising Star came in. They didn't book him. Out in the suburbs, there was a club called Who's on First. They didn't book him. There was one club called the Comedy Cottage that was out by the airport, and that's where I met him originally. He came out and did a set out there, and, like, you know, they would give him a little love, so he would, you know, get a few bookings out there. But Bernie fucking made his own way, right? So he would do that. Then he would go around town and he would find, like, a nightclub or a jazz club or some shit like that that had an off night. He's like, give me Tuesday night. And then he would put on his own show and he would host it. So then he would call four or five guys that, you know, that he knew that he liked. He would be the MC. And then those guys would come in and do their bit. And then that would be the show. So that's really how Bernie made his name around town. And he found a home at a place called the Cotton Club, which was on 22nd and Michigan on the south side. Like, that was really the club where it really took hold for him. They had a band and some other shit. And Bernie's show started at midnight. Right. So they had their regular show, whatever the regular shit is they did. Then at midnight, after all that was over, that's when Bernie's show would start. And it really became like the, like, fucking hottest ticket on the south side.
The land around the block.
Yep. Yeah, man, that shit would be packed at fucking 1 o'clock in the morning. And the thing about it was, it was a long, narrow club. And the stage was right by the front door. Literally, like, you open up the front door and then wind, and you're on stage feeling that shit. And
coming,
like,
to the stage.
Yeah, and you don't want to come cold in once Chicago the show starts. You don't want to fucking walk in on the Bernie Mac show.
Get roasted.
No, man, you don't fucking, like, that's 5 minutes right there of you fucking walking in. Yeah, so he really kind of made his bones there. And then later, All Jokes Aside came and some other shit. So it was an exciting time, man.
I like that he said that, like, when a lot of rooms don't want you, you got to create something for yourself. Like, a lot of, I didn't try to get into the Laugh Factory, you know, because I keep performing on Mondays only. So that when I had that room in Montebello, I was like, you know, you're like a star, like, when you have your own room and it's hot.
Yeah, man, you got to do
it.
And
people
shit.
Start taking notice.
Well, because it's like, it's almost like you're doing this act and they don't even know whether it's like that fucking comedy snob shit. I hate that.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what they have with Bernie. That's what they have a lot of guys. Like, however your act works.
Yeah.
They, you know, they had that fucking improv brick wall piano on the side. Like, that was what comedy was in their mind. Fucking guys standing at the mic, do a setup punchline, setup punchline.
Wearing a little coat. With-
yeah, fucking little jacket, skinny tie, all that shit. And a couple of those guys were good, but yeah. A lot of those motherfuckers was just like, cookie cutter, this is the way the act looks. Then you come in with some flavor, with some fucking style, you're not fucking faces. Following the rules, faces, you're loud, not so loud, you got a fucking accent, whatever the fuck. And they're like, oh, I don't know what that is. I'm not sure if that's so funny.
I don't know if we can market that. You should have let it run the block. It's market itself.
No, that's what I'm saying. They won't even put you on so to see what it looks like, to see if it works, to see if you can fucking take your act. It's like, what the fuck you think I've been doing? Just in a basement speaking Spanish by my fucking self for the last 10 years? I learned how to do this in a comedy club.
I know.
You know, and so that's the shit, man. That's how, you know, that's how you fucking end up at Oscar So White. It's a group of motherfuckers that are going, I don't even want to give you a shot. I'm just going to say that your shit won't work and fuck you like you're not a professional comedian. And go someplace else with that shit.
It's a mad breakdown right
yeah,
there.
So, yeah, hey, right, man.
Like, we had a room right in Montebello, and it was always packed. And it was like the same comedians there, Willie Barcena, Gabriel Iglesias, and right. me. And sometimes it would just be me because those guys were more successful.
Right.
So it was just me every Wednesday booking black comics, Asian comics, every comic. And let me tell you, every comic there had a hard time but right. me. Right. But they knew me there.
Right.
And every comedian, only the good ones, the greats, were admitted, you know, that I'm having a hard time up here. What did Corey Holcomb say, bro?
It was a very humbling experience.
and Corey's fucking funny.
He's funny. Yeah, dog.
Like, Corey's funny as shit.
Like, I could tell that the comedians that started off really small in there and like Scruncho was another one.
Scruncho.
And Daryl Heath.
Yeah.
The only time that Daryl Heath showed up was Alex Thomas. Alex Thomas went up, put on that black glove, killed. But
that's his superpowers, isn't it?
Yeah, I know, it's funny, right?
Motherfucker, you got that glove.
He had that bit about Alex Thomas had that bit about how, man, if I'm paying you $5 million a game, shit, you better start fucking sawing benches. You better start sawing benches, motherfucker. There better not be a loose seat in the whole arena. Motherfucker, you know, if somebody gets thirsty, you better get water for them. You're making $5 million a game. So he was killing with that shit, right? And then Daryl Heath went up there. Remember he had that bit about Black Spider-Man? He had a bit about Black Spider-Man. He had a bit about Men in Black.
I remember that one bit.
They're long bits.
Right.
But he was doing his bits, right? And he was slowly getting the audience. He was doing that bit about when he puts his jacket back in. And he does white gangs, you know, calling
other
gangs.
Yeah, old school gangs.
Vultures!
And the penguins.
This is how black people call their gang. This is how Mexicans call their neighborhood. And he was whistling like a Mexican.
Right.
And he started doing the black guys calling the hood. This is white guys. Pull up, man. White people, man, when they're in gangs, they have no shame, man. They write the name of the gang on the car. He goes, "Vultures, can't you read the sign?" So he started growing. He started like building the crowd, getting the crowd going. But then he started bombing again. And Daryl Heath said, "Man, right about now, where a comedian starts thinking about his career, whether he's gonna just start bombing or start hacking."
Right.
Hacking to survive.
Right. He goes, "But see, the kind of place where you start hacking, motherfucker, recognize the joke."
And then he
said, "Oh man, that's Eddie Murphy's joke." And then Daryl, he said, "That's not Eddie Murphy." Eddie Murphy says, "What do mama say?" I say, "Hama mama say." So he did this bit about getting caught stealing on stage, bro,
right,
with an audience member. A bit about getting caught as being called a hack by an audience member.
That's fucked.
That
up.
Was his bit, and that shit killed him. Got the audience back.
Damn.
Yeah, man. You know, audiences can always, you got to keep your funny going, but.
How?
But the truth, man, you know, like people do respond.
Honest, because Daryl, he was honest.
They did, like, the truth can help you, but it's kind of like you can't be sweating. You still got to get to something. You know, at some point, you got to fucking get a laugh. You can't be up there like, you know, just please don't be mad at me because I'm not funny.
Man, from being away for 20 years, man, you know a lot. You know the heat, man. You know the pain.
I got my stripes, goddamn. I have done the bits in the fucking horrible-ass places. On the southeast side of Chicago, it's a largely Latino neighborhood.
Mikey
O. My wife went out with me one time. I did a fucking Mexican block party. Like, and it was just one of those things. Like, I mean, it ended up going well, but it's one of those things where we drive up together. She's looking at me like, "You are not really fucking about to go do this. You're fucking battling roasted corn right now. It's you." Like that's what you're fucking up against. They got a fucking pinata over there. It's corn. You know, it's fucking a guy. It's fucking guitars and shit. And you got to go make these motherfuckers laugh. And it's like, fuck your act. That's, you know, funny is this thing where sometimes you just got to tap into that shit. And some of those gigs are, this is not about my fucking polish. This is not about I worked on these bits. Sometimes that shit is, motherfucker, tap into the fucking thing that makes you want to do this. Look around you, connect with these fucking people, and get some goddamn laughs. I have fucking worked in prisons and fucking stood on top of tables in lunchrooms and colleges. And sometimes that shit is just, hey, man, I know you wrote an act. That's fantastic. They don't give a fuck about your act. They did not see the news last week. They didn't see. No, motherfucker.
Relatable. No.
They have not flown in coach on the plane. No, they did not see the fucking peanuts. They didn't do none of that shit. You ever been at the grocery store? No, motherfucker. We have not been at the grocery store. That did not happen to us. Motherfucker, what talk about?
Who's from out of town? Just you, motherfucker.
Hey, dude. Man, that God shit damn. Right there. Like, you gotta fucking, you know, it's like that's when your skill as a comedian, the shit that you use to structure your jokes, the perspective that you use to deliver the shit, those things are real. Those things are constant. It's just what do you inform it with, right? So you can go into a fucking room and it's like, hey, fuck this bit. I'm funny. right? It ain't that I wrote that shit. I can come up with something here right now because that's what it is anyway. You know, you fucking read newspaper or some shit like that. You look at something and pop, pop, pop. You got a fucking joke in your head. It happens. It happens fast. But when you're in that setting, you just got to put that shit in the hyperdrive, right? You're setting up one joke while you're saying one thing, talking to somebody, and you're scanning the room fucking looking for your next joke.
Right away.
Right. That's the fucking level that you're working at. People
it's tough, man. You're thinking like you're thinking three jokes ahead already, bro. Yeah. Fucking stumbling.
No, it's just it's like, you know, it's like damn. A fucking point guard's coming up the fucking court, and you're like, fuck, how did he see that guy through three people running to the fucking hoop and jumped, and then I knew to do this.
Despair.
It's like, motherfucker, I see the floor, right? Y'all think y'all looking at me? I'm looking at everybody, right? And that's fucking comedy, man. When you operate at that highest level, you got to read the whole fucking room. You got to clock who's sitting where. Oh, I'm going to say this, motherfucker. I just saw your ass come in with that orange jacket on, but I don't need that yet.
I don't need save that
yes.
shit.
Yes. Ain't time for orange jacket because you fucked with the wrong person at the wrong time.
You yeah, used to do the whole show.
Hell yeah.
And because of my orange jacket.
Yes. Yeah, so all that shit, man, yeah, when you walk into unfamiliar territory, unfamiliar room, you got to fucking know who you are. You got to know where you are. You got to know what the fuck you do and how you do it. That's where the funny comes from, man.
Yeah, man, like sometimes, man, I don't know I remember I would show up to comedy shows and I don't know how the fuck I was funny after they just finished telling me, guys, we are going to have a show.
Right.
You ever been to those shows?
Yeah, man.
We are going to have a show. 30 people now.
Yep.
And you got to be funny because the audience doesn't know that you just been told that.
Oh,
and when you showed up on Atlanta, bro, the first night, you know, sometimes, man, like it's 30 people. You know, like you rocked it, but you can't really say I rocked it because you took some fucking powerful punches up there.
Yeah, money. You know? And that's the fucked up thing is small crowd in a big room. That's the worst shit, right? Because they came and like they're looking around going, oh shit, we're the only people that showed up for this. Is this really going to be fucked up? Then when you walk out, you know, you got a choice to make. Do I treat the 30 people that did show up like they came to something fucked up? Or do I treat it like it's 500 people here and not acknowledge that it's only 30? How do I deal with the fact that it's only fucking 30 people in here, there's 600 seats, and we got an hour to go? How do you fucking deal with that? But they'll stick with you, man. They will fucking stick with you if you get real with it, if you respect them, and you perform. You fucking come out to entertain, and you do your shit like it matters to you and like it matters to them. And they'd be like, yeah, it was only fucking 30 people in there, but we had a fucking good time. I respect him, right? If you can walk the fuck out of the door with that, eh, you know, maybe you get your crowd next time, right?
Man, let me tell you, man, it was like 30 people in the audience. And if you still tell those 30 people, you got merch, you got balls.
I'll fly these DVDs real quick.
Before I see Darren Carter, bro, set up the whole table.
I'm going to be out back. I got my shirt. I got my buttons.
Don't open that door. That wind will hit you.
The manager fucking mad dogging you, bro, because you fucking put the table out after I told you not to.
Table out. I'll be out. I'll be out in the lobby. I'll be signing.
I'll be signing.
Hey.
And I was still trying to get laid tonight, too, people.
Hey.
I know it's Monday, but I'm going to go home with one of you guys.
But they showed up, man. You know.
That's funny. They say that. A lot of comedians don't do that, like respect it like you did right now. Like treat the crowd like it's 150 people or treat them like they just been had.
Something. Make a fucking choice and go with it, right? But don't be up there being indecisive. Being indecisive in comedy will always fuck you. In whatever position in the comedy spectrum you stand, if you don't know what the fuck you're doing, it's something bad's about to happen.
Goddamn right, dog.
What's your worst bombing, bro?
Fuck.
My
worst bombing was at the Bicycle Club Casino with Keith Morris, dog.
I went up Keith there. Keith Morris?
That shit
for
was,
the 45 minutes in between sets.
Shit. That shit was so bad, I was up there shivering, dog. This fool gets me off stage, I'm all, fuck that, dog. Let me do another joke. He's like, okay, man, you a warrior. Hang on, people. He's going to do one more joke, all right? He's going to get y'all back.
You a warrior.
I went back over there. Those motherfuckers said, hell no.
Ah, shit.
Hell to the no.
Yeah, dog.
Were they singing it though? That's the worst. Dude.
Oh, that's crazy. Yeah, he's a warrior.
I mean, I bombed a grip, dude, but I mean, that's like the one that's like, God damn, dog.
And then you gotta drive home. I started shivering, bro.
You gotta drive home for an hour, dog. And then you get that one
going over your set.
From the that comic will tell you, man, do not stop doing what you're doing.
You got hard, man. You got hard.
You got some gas and a match, motherfucker.
You're a warrior. That's fucked up.
It's been a war ever since. No, it's all good though. Shit.
You're an unknown soldier.
Let me do one more.
Yeah, they weren't having it, though.
Wait, man. They want to hear my De La Hoya impersonation.
They weren't having it, dog. But again, I went up there, you know, indecisive. You can't do that.
You can't hell be indecisive, no. Man.
Because they know. They sense that shit. They'll feel that fear on you.
Man, comedy is like, it's the closest thing to boxing. It's the fucking closest thing to boxing, man. You got to go out there. You got to fucking score hits. And the last punch don't mean shit. They'll turn on you any second. You know, even when they fucking like you, they'll turn on you. Right? It's the only fucking art form where there's this real ever present fucking, you're engaged the whole time. The worst thing is not even being booed. The worst thing is being ignored. You know when motherfuckers just clock out and start talking to each other? Like, we don't even respect you enough to boo you off the stage. We know that if we just ignore you, you'll leave eventually. So we just gonna talk to each other right now until some other shit happens. That's I hate that. Boo me off, please. Motherfucker, if I suck that bad, boo me the fuck off stage. Please don't make me just stand up here for the next 35 minutes and continue talking while you all do something else. Because I'm contractually obliged to continue to fucking talking. I can't just stand up here and just not talk. You know, the club owner got to gonna watch me bomb. I got to keep telling jokes, even if the whole fucking audience starts eating chicken wings, smoking cigarettes, going out, checking their phone, whatever the fuck they're doing. I got to do 25, and I'm at 20, and y'all just stopped paying attention. Right? Who's going to have mercy? Is the MC going to come out? I don't know. What, a headliner don't want to do 55. He only wants to do 45. Motherfucker, you got to stay your ass out there and keep talking. That's the worst. You boo me off, I can go. I'll feel bad, but at least it's over. Nah, fuck that, man. Ignored is the worst shit.
They start talking. Blah, 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 blah.
Hell yeah. Then there's no communication whatsoever.
Clink, 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 clink. Clink, clink, clink.
Crickets. Blah, blah, blah,
blah. 20 minutes turns into an hour.
Clink, clink, clink. Clink, clink, clink.
Nothing hit.
That's usually happens at a college gig.
Oh, fuck colleges, man. You do colleges still?
Not anymore. Unless they book me, yeah, but not anymore.
But I mean,
I've done quads.
But you got to go in now, like you. Yeah. Right? Because there's a point where you go in and you're doing the fucking the NACA and all that shit. And I'm like, oh, he was Spanish. This is great. Right? We live in Iowa. We never seen a Spanish person before. He was so funny. He did voices and shit. Then you get out there and I don't know, man. They got you. They give you a fucked up hotel. You're in some kind of fucked up event space. Sometimes it's a lunchroom and they build some jackass stage that they fucking, you know, push two or four or five tables together.
Student,
you know,
union.
They got the house PA system, old ass 1960 Shure speakers and shit is attached to the wall over there. Got that fucking skinny ass silver microphone, the one with the little bitty head.
Yeah.
Right? All that shit. Everything. Yeah, it's like everything is bad. They saw you presented in the best circumstance you could be in, and then they present you in this bullshit. It's like just every fucking thing is wrong. And then college, stupid ass college kids, man. They just did the worst.
You're performing on stage, bro, but they didn't tell you that there's some Coke machines behind you. There'll be people behind you standing in line to buy Cokes.
Clink, clink.
Because they just want a fucking Coke. They didn't even know it was a show. They put you in the room with the Coke machine and shit. It's a line of people at the Coke machine and did not come to see you.
And you're on stage performing and you're thinking that you're bombing because people are walking and leaving and shit. Oh, fuck, you didn't like me? I'm a class, motherfucker. I got to go. You're all right.
It's, yeah, sometimes if you get a poorly promoted college show,
most of them
kids really don't give a fuck. Like, it was just like they were in a building and some shit started happening. At least people at the club left their house and came here expecting to see a show. Then you could pay off or not pay off. A lot of college kids, they was in the fucking, you know, the rec hall and shit. And then some motherfucker got up on a table and started talking. Who the fuck's that guy? You didn't see the sign on the, we did a little, there's a sticker on the door that says show tonight.
Sticker.
I know.
No poster, dog.
Some fucking sticker.
Up here fucking campaigning and shit.
They put one in the fucking label maker. They put your shit up on a pole.
I remember my first college gig was for a guy named Killer in Berkeley. And he didn't have a room for us.
Oh,
and we drove all the way over there. It was like $150 for the gig.
Damn.
And no microphone. It was a little lapel.
God damn.
And he had no food, nothing. It was a hell gig. And the next year, Ernie G and Gabriel Iglesias did it. And at the end of the night, they were asking the same promoter for a room. He told him, "What happened, bro? You guys can't get laid or hook up like the last comedians?"
Man.
They slept in the back of a truck. Somebody said, you could use my truck. So one of the students said, "Use my truck." And they were in the back of the truck, and they used pizza boxes for blankets.
Man. I got booked in a gig someplace in Iowa. I got booked in a lot of Iowa gigs by this one company, man. This motherfucker sent me to like some kind of Catholic school. So, first of all, when I get into the show, sitting right down front are two nuns. I mean, nuns in the whole fucking, you know, fucking wings on the head, the whole shit.
Mother Teresa style.
Oh, man. And so it's not even about being clean. It's not that I couldn't do a clean act. It's that every fucking body is looking at the nuns, waiting to see if they're going to laugh at something. And if they laughed, then the people would laugh. So now I got 50 minutes of trying to fucking make two nuns laugh so that I can fucking make to connect with the rest of the crowd. Because if I don't get them, I don't get nobody. Even if they think I'm funny, they ain't gonna fucking laugh because I'm leaving tomorrow, but they'll still be fucking here with the nuns. Right. So they got that shit. Did the show. It went okay-ish. Right. I got out of there alive. Then they had me fucking stand. They didn't have a room. That motherfucker did not get me a motel room. Did not have the decency to get me a fucking $30 motel room. These motherfuckers showed me to my room. One of these students walked you down. It was in the fucking church basement. When I tell you, it was a fucking twin bed with a little fucking... These motherfuckers had me in there like the Pope or some shit. It was a twin bed, and it was a little nightstand, a little 1-foot by 1-foot square top nightstand. That bitch had a bowl on top and a washcloth in that motherfucker. I'm like, you got to be fucking kidding me right now. I cannot stay in this. I can't stay in this tonight. Nothing in my soul will allow me to stay in this fucking basement tonight in the middle of fucking Iowa on a twin bed with a silver bowl with a washcloth in this motherfucker.
The first day of the seminary.
Man, if that shit's almost heartbreaking though, man. You know, because now you got to come out of your pocket for a room and shit. You can call up your agent and curse that motherfucker out, but you're here now. And you know he made the deal. That's the fucked up part. You know he made the deal. There's no way they confused this room with a hotel. There's no fucking way on earth, man. So I'm kind of glad I ain't got to do that shit.
Wow, a wash bowl, bro.
That bitch had a bowl in it. My fucking wash cloth in that shit.
You got to wash.
I know.
The toilet was under the bed. You didn't see it?
Come on, man.
God damn. Solitude up in that motherfucker.
That's old school, bro. You pee on those little bowls and you put it under the bed.
That motherfucker's like, now come in here and think about that comedy act you did. You need to get one with God to consider whether or not you want to keep doing this job.
We'll be stoning somebody at 4. Be there.
We'll be burning a witch next week.
Those are the days, man. Those are the days.
So how'd you go from staying in rooms like that to being a showrunner for big shows? What is a showrunner for our listeners can know?
What is a showrunner?
They don't get it.
The showrunner. When you see, you watch a TV show and you see a title at the end of the show, beginning of the show says executive producer. The showrunner is the person, it's like the director of a movie, right? Yeah. That's what a showrunner is on a television show. You know, you oversee all the creative decisions. You got to keep shit on schedule. You hire people. You hire the staff, the other writers. When you're a showrunner, you hire the directors, right? And you just kind of oversee the creative vision of the show. So I was a showrunner and co-creator on Everybody Hates Chris. So that's what I did there. You know, did the same thing on Are We There Yet? I'm working on a show called Survivor's Remorse right now on Stars. Michael Malley is the showrunner on that
show. Survivor's Remorse is like when somebody... everyone dies in a plane and one person survives?
Yeah, right. Okay. Look, you got the idea. Yeah. But it's kind of based on, loosely based on LeBron James's life. You know, like a young basketball player, you know, gets really successful.
And your friends don't.
Yeah.
Okay.
There you go.
Kind of what's the name, the guy from the, he suffered from that, from the 76ers. Allen Iverson.
Allen Iverson, yeah.
He had some of that.
Did you see his documentary?
No, but I could tell, cool, man. 30 for 30? 30 for 30, yeah, I did see it.
So you go home and watch Internal Affairs, and then you go watch the Allen.
Watch the whole movie, bro. Full completely watch. I watched a quarter of it. Who watches their fractions, that guy said.
And then tomorrow y'all come in and you try to stab him, you try to choke him.
Yeah.
And then, keep this shit interesting. So that's what showrunner is. Showrunner oversees like all of the day-to-day and creative decisions that, you know, that have to be made on a show, hiring writers and all that kind of stuff. So I've done that job and I direct and shit like
because
that.
Because when I was going through meetings with my last manager, and we kept our stumbling block was, well, we got to get a showrunner.
Got to get
a
showrunner.
And the manager kept saying that. Motherfucker, you're a manager. Find a showrunner. What are you telling me for?
Look, here's the fucked up thing. Look, sometimes you have an idea that's a great idea. Sometimes you have an idea that's a little bit shaky. What the fucked up thing that representatives never want to do is tell you the truth. Like, you can't fucking handle it. So, like, if your man said to you, look, your idea is good, it's not great. Or it's a great idea, but these motherfuckers don't know what to do with it. That will not be the first time you ever heard that before. Look, man, I love this fucking idea that you have, but these people don't fucking get it. So unless they need an intermediary, they need some guy to say, I understand his idea. And then they go, well, fuck, we'll do it then. But otherwise, if they just fucking love the idea, they'll just buy it and then they'll go find somebody. Because guess what? There's unemployed showrunners all the fuck over the city. If we fucking go outside and throw a rock, we're liable to hit a fucking showrunner in the head. Right? So when they're telling you, you know, this is a great idea, we got to find a showrunner, that's just them basically going, I don't want to tell you that we don't want to do this idea for one reason or another, but I want to tell you that there's this creative stumbling block and we can't get past that. But yeah, how many shitty shows have you seen on the air? A lot. You don't have to name them, right? A lot of those fucking ideas is because some executive sat in a room and went, we love this. We're going to do this fucking thing, you know, come hell or high water. Call a showrunner. We don't give a fuck who it is. Just, we just need a guy sitting in the chair because we intend on doing this show. And then there's other times when, you know, you got a showrunner or some talent, whatever, they come in with a brilliant idea, and they're like, we don't know. So it's Felipe. Who else is in it? Does he have a female lead? I don't know. Do you think they understand his accent? It's just like they got a billion fucking reasons to say no. Because a lot of times movies, TV, and I ain't trying to be cynical about it, but a lot of people are in the business of protecting their job. We create shit. We've had losses. We've had wins. We go out. We get laughs. Sometimes we don't. We fucking go at it again because we know what we're doing. You go out. You have a fucked up set. You know what to do the next night to fix that shit, especially if you got a similar set. You're in the same house. You know, okay, fuck. I did this shit this set. I'm going to go back out next set. I'm going to flip these two things around, fucking go out. It works. You know what the fuck you're doing. They don't. You're sitting in the room. There are some creative executives that really do understand what it takes to make a good show or how you support a good show or how you support an artist. Those are few and far between. Most of these motherfuckers came in, they used to work in the mailroom or some shit, and they worked their way up, and now suddenly they're sitting there telling you what they think is funny and how you connect to an audience or how you don't fucking connect to an audience. And they're basing that shit on Carlos Mencia because that was the last motherfucker they saw that had a fucking Latino name.
Yeah.
And they go, so Carlos did this. Do you do something like that? Because what he did worked or what he did didn't work. Are you going to do that or are you going to not do that? That's the only fucking reference point they have, right? Otherwise, it's like, that's the hard part of it. You know, fuck your audience. You know, fuck the thousands of people or the tens of thousands of people that come in. I don't know who we're going to sell this show to. I'm not sure who might buy this. Bitch, you're in California. Right? This shit used to be Mexico before y'all drew the fucking line and moved it. Right? You're in fucking Los Angeles. Does that mean anything to you? Right?
Who's going to watch it?
Who's going to watch it? I don't know where the people fucking Paramount Studios is. It's in Mexico. Paramount Studios is in Mexico. They think it's Los Angeles, but if you walk outside, you're in fucking Mexico. Who's gonna watch this show? I don't know who the people are.
Are they going to get it in Ohio? Bitch, California's bigger than Ohio.
Right. So, I mean, so that's the shit. And it's like, it's not to be discouraged. It's just to understand like what you're up against. So having the cleanest fucking hardest hitting, and then they want the shit to be a little Spanish. You know, they want to make sure that's in there. Because here's the bottom line: when
the
you're
maracas
dealing,
and the big titties.
No, dude, look.
Yeah, just tapatio style like Cristela show.
Right, they need that. Right.
Good luck. Pasa some pan dulce. That's authentic.
They could give a fuck about you having a regular day, right? And the show's just gonna be like it's gonna be about me. I got a wife, and you know, and I got a job, and I got a couple of kids, and they're a little wacky. They're like, no, that's our shit. We got regular on lock. White people are like, normal shit, that's what we do.
Yeah.
We need you motherfuckers to talk about immigration or something.
Yeah.
That's what we can't fuck with that. Oh, so you black people, we need you. Can you do something black in there? Right? Because that's your shit. Right? Just being regular and walking around, that's our shit. Just a show about a fucking girl who doesn't like her life. Right? Oh, that's white people shit. That's what we do. It's like, you know, that's everybody's shit. That's nah.
No, they won't get it.
No. I don't understand your Mexican problems.
Or a white show might go through this. You know, we already have 10 white shows like that. How about there's a monkey in there? How about the lead is a talking monkey?
Can we get a monkey in this?
Yeah, that'll really work.
Good.
If you we'll have a show. We'll have Bobcat go. We'll play a talking dog.
That would be good. He'll be a chihuahua. Bobcat Goldthwait will be your talking chihuahua. It'll be great. Be fucking fantastic.
We're going to have a Mexican show, but the neighbor is La Llorona. She's a mythical Aztec warrior.
So it is. It's tough, man. That's the tough part about it. When you come in from a different ethnicity, when you're coming from a different life experience, and you got to go and sit in a room with 5 white women and explain to them why your life is funny.
That was my meeting. I had ABC.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I was five white women.
I know.
I was at ABC talking, bro, being charming. You know how I was? I picture this is how you got to be, bro, at these meetings. You got to be as corny and as happy and lovable as Jim Carrey is in Dumb and Dumber when he's having that dream. Remember he had that dream
right.
That hanging out with that girl, and Sarah Swanson, and he's hanging out with her friends, and Jim Carrey's the life of the party,
right.
And he's making all stupid faces,
and
making popcorns, right? Everybody loves him. That's how you gotta be, man. Likeable. You gotta be fake.
Yep, just a little. You gotta sell. Because look, here's what happens. So you go into a room with your funny fucking idea. And you're about to tell it to motherfuckers.
Bro, it's ideas.
Ideas. But see, here's what happens. They got 10 of these meetings today.
Oh, I didn't know that. Right. I thought that was special.
Motherfucker, no. You came in and then they
tried. I don't know after they told me no. They wouldn't go tell Gabriel Iglesias yes.
Yeah, motherfucker. They tried to put somebody between you and Fluffy so you didn't see him.
A buffer.
They tried to put somebody in there. They sent Bill Bellamy in so you wouldn't see Fluffy and shit, right? They did that. They're like, we can't have the fucking Spanish motherfucker show up back to back, so let's throw somebody in there and maybe they'll miss each other in the garage, right? So they do that, right? So they got 10 meetings today. And literally at the end of the day, you got to think like this. It ain't even about funny anymore. Fuck funny. It ain't even about charismatic. Now this shit is down to what do I remember? I've been in 10 fucking meetings today. What do I remember? That's the thing that I'm going to pitch to my executive. That's above me. The last fucking thing I can remember. Just like you getting fucking choked out. Think of it like that. Think of a pitch meeting as, all right, you're choking these bitches. You're choking 5 women. You got them down on the floor. You're choking them. What's the last thing they remember before they passed out? That's what they're going to say.
Spitting in their eyeballs.
That's what they're going to say when they wake up. She was a guy. He's just curly, dark, kind of swarthy. It was Spanish. That sounds good. Let's go with that. Let's go with Spanish. That's all they got, man. And then when they call you back, then you have to explain it again. Because they can, all the shit that you think is funny, they're going to say it all wrong to whoever the next person is they talk to.
And they all seen your stand-up special, by the way.
Yeah, they all saw it. They saw 5 minutes of it, maybe.
Yeah.
Actually, one of them saw it, and then they talked to the other 4 of them about it. Right.
Yeah, that one woman saw me, and she told the 5 other women.
And they're like, oh, we love your special, because they know you've got one, because she told them. Oh, your special.
We love the podcast, too, by the way. The
podcast is great. We love it. It's fantastic.
Rodrigo's laugh. Great.
Oh, I love it. So amazing. So anyway, tell us about some shit that you were going to try to do. We don't give a fuck about anything you've done. That's just what got you in the room, right? Everything you've done just got you in the room. Now let's talk about what you're going to do. And hopefully at the end of the day, we remember what the fuck you said. There's one girl, she's writing notes.
Right? Yeah.
And if they can fucking remember one thing that makes them laugh, then that'll get you to up to the next level. And then you get to talk to a person who has a slightly better attention span.
That's why they didn't tweet nobody, bro. I don't want to tell nobody I got a show. Everybody watching them, they're thinking they're going to get a show, huh?
Yeah, it's fucked up. It's tough.
But it's tough.
It's like fucking Terradome or some shit. What's that Mad Max Thunderdome? It's like that, man. It is. You can't be timid about this shit. You can't be too sensitive about it. You can't be so sensitive that like you think your idea is the best idea in the world. And they never heard anything like it. They've heard 50 ideas like it
today.
And the decision that they're making between you and Carlos and Gabriel, now they're looking at, they're checking Twitter and seeing who's got the fucking most followers. Then they send somebody in the room and they check the fucking Q rating on your podcast. Then they check and see what your stats are. Do you have ticket sales? And you can be fucking Kevin Hart and be the most famous fucking comedian in the country. And they can still be like, but we really like Anthony Jeselnik. Damn. We really like him. You know, that dude ain't funny, but it's like, yeah, but this motherfucker ain't packing them in at 25,000 a clip all over the world, right? This motherfucker ain't got the same reach, but yeah, I know, but, you know, Ohio.
He does us
shit. Peoria.
Ohio. Yeah, so it's tough, man. It's tough. You got to get to wrap your head around it.
In all those years you've been working in TV, from Comic Justice all the way up until now, have you seen it changed, evolved a little bit? Now there's like, you know, black executives or somebody with like that can understand where you come from like a pitch like that, or is it still like back in the old?
On the real, man, on the network side, I know one black executive. I've had experiences. I mean, the amount of black executives I've dealt with in all of the fucking meetings I've been in that actually had any kind of real say-so and not just a motherfucker. They said, Janice, get in here. You know, one fucking 24-year-old black girl sitting there being quiet and shit because they just told her, come on, come sit in on this.
She from Barbados.
You know, yeah, so it's not a lot. It hasn't really changed. It's not been a sea change, man. It's, you know, you got a few more black executives. Then, you know, if you're fucking with BET or TV One or some shit like that, you're going to meet some black people over there. But on the network level, the big five.
Same old.
One, pretty much.
More women.
You know? And so if somebody is being proactive, like, you know, like the CW has expanded, but their shit was girls. You know, they really hit the young girl market hard for a minute. And they're still in the girl space, but they've gotten a little more expansive with the demo. You know, so they got Jane the Virgin is over there and some other things. And, you know, and then Blackish and Shonda Rhimes and all that stuff is at ABC. So they start to see, it's like, oh, okay, there's some other shit that we can do. But the decision makers is still, you know, you're still walking into a lily white room 99% of the time. You know, just is. And if they're smart enough to look around and go, oh, fuck, we're only 46% of the country now. You know, we're the majority in terms of one singular demo, but in terms of the mass of people, the minorities are actually the majority. You know, it's like, yeah, man, this is a fucking losing race. As I always say to my wife, it's like, y'all gonna lose this shit eventually. You know why? Y'all came over on boats. These motherfuckers walked over. Y'all gonna lose, man. Hey, these motherfuckers, they grow here.
By the bunches.
The forbidden fruit.
Yeah, all that fucking
those acres of Mexicans.
That Anglo shit, that's imports, motherfucker. Y'all talking about immigration. Yeah, that's your fucking problem. That's why you can't them. You them? Yeah, motherfucker, y'all drew a line. Yeah, fucking California. California was Mexico all the way up to San Francisco. That was all fucking Mexico. They drew a fucking line and said, United States. And then some Mexicans looked up and said, where are we? You're in the States now. Oh, fuck. How'd that happen? We drew a line.
Now get out of your house.
Yeah, right. Get the fuck out of here. We want our country back. What the fuck are you talking about? We were here, man. So it's, I don't know. I could go on about that shit all day long.
So are you going to write for the Oscars this year?
I am not.
You wrote for the Oscars for last time, right?
With Chris Rock. I wrote him last time. Yeah, and he called again, and I'm always happy to do something with him when I can. But as it turned out, this time I'm on another show, and just the schedules didn't really work out. You know, I'm a little sad. I missed this one. I'm excited for what he's going to do. I think it's going to be pretty cool, whatever it is.
So what are you thinking about all that boycotting Oscars?
I don't know, man. You know, I mean, like, I got two points of view on it. On the one hand, yes. Like, if you respect this particular group of people, they should be represented. But what the fucked up part is that why do we have to not come to the party? Because you motherfuckers are assholes. Right? Why is that the answer? You know, like, how come Leo DiCaprio don't go, you know, this is really fucked up what you guys are doing. I'm not coming. What if George Clooney said, I'm not coming? What if Jennifer Lawrence said, I'm not coming? Right? Because that's who the fuck they need to see on the front row. If them fucking front seats was with seat fillers, and then they brought in, you know, Idris Elba and shit, hey, Idris, take my seat. Right? If they said, hey, in the event that I do win, that was Marlon Brando did the badass fucking move of all time. Yes. Like, that's, yeah, do that. Leo DiCaprio, you're a bad motherfucker. Yeah, send fucking Idris Elba up to accept your award. Right? Like, that's how you show people that what is happening is fucked up. But sometimes when you just remove the element that makes people uncomfortable, then they just fucking go, this is great. The black people didn't come. Now we don't have to feel bad that we didn't fucking invite them. It's fantastic. Right?
Yeah, like if Will Smith was actually going to be in the front row,
yeah, he'll
be five rows back.
Yeah, so that's the shit. So, you know, it always takes, whenever one group is being disenfranchised or being discriminated against, the fucking people that have to make the decision to be inclusive are the people who got power. You know, ain't gonna be no fucking women's rights unless men want women's rights. That's how it fucking happens. There's not gonna be any fucking equality in race unless fucking white people want there to be equality, because there's inequality, right? If we could just fucking be equal, this would not be a conversation. We actually need you motherfuckers to cooperate with this shit. And if you decide that you don't want to cooperate, then something's gonna go down. There's gonna be some choking and some stabbing. Is it gonna be a fucking problem? Or we're going to have a real fucking discussion about how you're going to include these people into this conversation. So, yeah, you can't look at the people who don't have the power and expect them to do the shit to make the change. I mean, we can fucking rabble rouse and go out and make a speech. Beyonce can go to the Super Bowl and do a dance and all the rest of that. And that's great. People should be aware. They should know what the fuck is going on. But at the same time, Free Deals could just go, man, that shit was on for 3 minutes. Fuck that. We're going to wait a month. People won't be thinking a fucking thing about it. It will be business as fucking usual. It's disturbing them right now. And then Trump won the fucking New Hampshire primary. So now they're not talking about that no more. Beyonce was the fucking news for a day and a half. Now Trump won and fuck Beyonce. We're done. Right? So that's the fucking news cycle. That's the way shit works. Unless some white people want it to be different, the shit won't change until those people who are in control, who like it the way it is, die. We can you accelerate that with stabbing and choking.
I'm waiting for that new wave you of abolitionists.
Yeah, you know, or we can be persuasive with slaps. You know, but the reality is, yeah, it's like that. You know, it's anything, man. It's just LGBT rights, all that shit. All that's about motherfuckers being in charge, saying to somebody else, you know what? What's happening here is fucked up, and we want it to be different. What can we do to help? Right? It also can't be white people's ideas of how to fix the shit, because they're going to come up with the wrong thing. White people will come up with the least painful way of including you.
Really?
Right? Yeah, right. It's like, so you guys want to fly from New York to L.A. Do you have to do it on a jet?
I thought you were going to use your arms. Again.
Like when people say that, do you guys know the power of Latino consumers? I mean, they know it and they're okay with it, man.
They don't
got to change anything.
I don't know if they got power. I know they buy shit.
I know we buy a lot of shit.
Right?
We go to the movies every weekend.
They know that. Do you know how much shit Latinos spend money on? Yes, we do. What about their power? I wouldn't call it power exactly. They're not wielding this power in any fucking... Yeah, that shit don't matter.
Yeah, unless we all get together one day, every Mexican in the world, in the United States, one day, don't go to McDonald's and don't buy a Coke. That'll really cause a problem.
for that day, but then you got to do it the next day.
And we won't do it, though. We won't do it.
You still want that Coke.
There's always that one Mexican. Man, fuck that fool, bro. I want my fucking Coca-Cola. It's in Spanish, bro, right?
Yeah, people, they got to be embarrassed. They got to be embarrassed enough. That's like, we don't even know if we're not doing this because we really want to help you. We just don't want to feel embarrassed. So how can we, what minuscule fucking changes can we do? And they're going to be incremental. They're going to make the tiniest fucking changes they can make until the pain stops. That's how change fucking happens. Like, it's like, we're going to stick this fucking dick knife into you. And it's really going to hurt. And then we're just going to, like, pull it out a little bit until you can, like, the pain normalizes. And then we'll leave it there. That's fucking the change. That's racial politics. It's fucking gender politics. It's like, we know that we've been fucking you relentlessly and without regard for your well-being for a millennium. We know that we've been doing that. We'll stop a little bit. We're not going to stop entirely, though. Just enough so that a few people go, well, they slowed down. They're not fucking everybody.
There's some improvements.
Yeah.
I mean, they ain't killing you, right?
Yeah, he's still fucking them, but he's not choking her anymore. He's fucking her, but he's not choking her. So that's better.
He's giving you a Band-Aid after.
Yeah. So that's the fucking, you know, that's kind of where it is. It's going to be the tiniest little fucking incremental changes they can make. And then at some point, you know, yeah, they get old and they die, or somebody fucking comes up and hits them on the head and there's a fucking coup or some shit like that.
A coup.
Yeah. Change usually occurs with death. Some motherfucker has to die, you know. Yeah, fucking, what's that guy, Castro? He's going to die.
Fidel Castro.
He's going to die, and then they'll be like, all right, he's dead. We don't have to fucking pretend whatever that shit is. He's still alive. Somebody's got to go to fuck in there and go, no, we're still not talking to him. All right, I was just making sure.
He probably already died, huh?
I don't know, maybe.
Look at that fool propped up right there.
I know.
Weekend at Carlos. Weekend at Fidel's, the next movie.
Coño, part two.
So what's up, fool?
What's up, fool?
Chilling, what you man? Got, Rodrigo?
Right here, man, with fucking Chi-Town's finest right here.
Hey, man, you know, ranting and raving and shit.
Hell yeah, dude. That's fucking some beautiful information you're spitting out, man. Hey. A lot of people don't know that and with that perspective.
I know a lot of people out here going, man.
Seriously, man.
A lot of people sitting at home right now going, man, I'm going to just throw my script away now. Or, man, like, I'm pretty sure Bernie Mac, you know, knowing him, how many people will walk up to him, man, I got a movie idea for you.
Man, that shit.
We're unwritten.
It was bad then. It's fucking now you with Facebook and all that shit. Motherfucker, the script pitches you get in your inbox, motherfucker will hit you on Twitter and it's like, yo, I got a series. It's like, you.
A series?
Yeah, a series.
I got a series idea, man. You gotta inbox me.
Who green like that shit?
And in reality, I can't say I blame them. I can't say I blame him. My dumb ass is the one got on Twitter and let him see me, right? Like, if you don't want fucking pictures on the TV show from Twitter, then get the fuck off Twitter. Because, you know, you just came down to the ground level. You know, you just came to where everybody can get at you. And since everybody can get at you, then you got certain decisions to make. How am I going to handle this? How do I respond to it? When do I respond to it? Do these people even fucking, does it matter if I do or don't respond? All of those fucking real choices you got to make. But yeah, your dumb ass is the one that got on Twitter. Your dumb ass is the one that got, hey, look at me. I'm a showrunner. I'm on Facebook. Hey, want to do my TV show? No, fuck you then. Get off Facebook. So yeah, man, no, it happens. You know, it happens a lot. It probably happens every week. Somebody sends a fucking, I got a script, I got a movie, I got a pitch. Can you meet with me? I got an idea or whatever. They did not call me when you said you needed a showrunner. There was a period of time, like, dude, me, anybody else. There's always a showrunner, so don't fucking fall for that shit.
I won't fall for that shit.
But they're like, we need a showrunner. Just fucking tell me you don't want to do the idea.
Just tell me.
Just, it's okay. Look, motherfucker, it's okay. You got gigs that you didn't get. You could went places they didn't want to book you. Fine. I just don't want to fucking call you back no more. I did this shit. There was a club owner one time. You ever had this one? Where you go, and you probably early on when you're still trying to, you know, your early days, you middling or some shit like that, and you're trying to get the club date, right? So you call up like, so what is it? It's fucking February right now. And you call up the fucking Funny Bone or something. She'd be like, yeah, man, you know, you say I call you in February so you can get the bookings. Yeah, yeah. Oh, man. So like I'm booked out to June 16th. So why don't you call me back in about a month and then we'll see what we can do then. No, motherfucker. Why don't you book me on June 17th? Oh, look, man, it's not really how we, how come you can't do that? If you want to book me, if that's what you're saying, and you're booked out to June 16th, and then the next day you don't have any fucking bookings, why do you want me to wait a month to call you back so then you can fucking tell me that you're booked out to September 16th? Because that's what the fuck you did when I said, call me back in fucking March, and then I called you, and now you're saying you booked until June. Then it was you were booked until April, right? So that's the fucking flip. They do that shit. It's like, just tell me, man. Just tell me you don't want to book me. You know, give me the fucking respect of not having to waste a fucking phone call. And so you got to get on the phone with me and lie and tell me to call you at another time because you can't fucking be man enough to say I don't want you in my club. Just say that. I won't fucking try to come here. Fuck you. I'll go someplace else. Yeah, I ain't mad at you. You get to put whoever you want to put in your club. But why I got to keep fucking calling you and we do this fucking go round because you're too much of a pussy to say you don't want to book me. Just say it. Then I'll go call somebody else.
I'm going to pencil you in. Like you, I mean, if you cancel, I could erase it. I got that one time. I'm going to pencil you in. No, motherfucker. Put in ink. I want you to erase it later.
What are you doing, man?
Oh, man. What are you doing? Heartbreak, we would tell you that shit.
Man, and that's the shit. You got to go through that shit, though.
When you send your whole package.
Man.
You're going to put a tape and a resume together. You send it, and they send it back. No thanks. I got one. I sent my package to Abrams. Abrams Management.
Yeah.
I put a resume, everything together, and I mailed it to them, and they sent it back. And they said, no thanks. And everybody told me, every comedian I spoke to, hey, bro, at least they sent it back. Return to sender.
Little Elvis song.
Or the Ice House, too. When I first started off, I tried to call up, and it was a different booker. And she says, we have all our headliners right now and and our features, and I don't think you're good enough to compete with the openers. And I'm thinking, lady, because they have their own openers.
Right.
But I was like, you told me to call. You know? The guy who's going to put me on 5 o'clock Fundies, what's wrong with you?
Right. I didn't just fucking go, hey, I have shit to do today. I think I'm going to call up some comedy clubs and see if one of them will give me some time on stage. You told me to call. I got the number from you. Call me back in a month.
Bernie Mac had a show on HBO where everything was called Mac.
Midnight Mac Hour?
Midnight Mac Hour with the Macaronis, remember?
Yes,
the
band, the Macaronis.
You wrote on that show?
I was on that show.
That was a bad show. Everything, what was the name of the sketch group? The Macaronis, right?
That was the dance group.
The dance group was the Macaronis.
The dance group was the Macaronis. That show came out of another one of these little spots. He used to do a show in a little club, a little jazz club. When I tell you this place held 100 people, right, that was it. It was downstairs like from a diner. Right. In the downtown area like Chicago, if you went down there, you know, it'd be easy to walk past it and never know it was there. The place was called Milt Trenier's. Milt was in a jazz trio called the Trenier Brothers. Right. So he had this little jazz club downstairs. Same thing. Off night. I think we had Mondays. And so Bernie put together a show where it was him. He had like a 8-9 piece band. On a fucking stage, when I tell you that it was the size of this little tabletop right here, a little bit bigger because it was square. And so, like, you know, drums was here, and then he had a keyboard over there, four home players, bass, guitar, fucking the whole thing. The dancers would come up on stage. They'd do all of that. He would come down every Monday. I used to write material for him when he did this show. So, like, I would send him 5 or 6 pages of jokes. He would take that 4 or 5, whatever he wanted to do, turn that shit into, like, a half-hour set, right? He did that every Monday. He had the band. He had singers come in. Anytime, like any ball player shit, like Shaq used to come down. Like the band would kick into something. Shaq used to rap, right? So Shaq would do like freestyle shit like that. R. Kelly would be down there. Yeah, I mean, it was really the spot that people came to, man. A lot of guys came up. Craig Robinson came there. He started out down there. Deion Cole used to come through there. Corey Holcomb came through. So it was really fucking this great spot. And HBO got wind of it. I don't fucking know how. And they came down. They saw that show. And so that show became the basis for Midnight Mac. Midnight Mac only did 4 episodes. I think it was only 4. Really cool show. And then, you know, that was that. And then he started doing that show as a big touring show. So that became the Who You With tour. And that was the same thing. He had the big band, fucking dancers, you know, 2 singers on the bill. It was like a big fucking traveling variety show, man. Bernie did his own shit. If he did anything, he fucking made his own way. Nobody helped him. You know, everybody had to be convinced. So he would go do his shit, get his people, and then, you know, people got won over like that. But, yeah, you know, when they was doing Kings of Comedy, same thing, man. You know, Bernie was the only fucking guy when they went into that tour that was already doing 3,000 and 4,000 and 5,000 seat houses. You know, as big as Steve Harvey is now, at that time, you know, he was doing large and great shows, but he wasn't doing them on the level of Bernie. Bernie was the guy that was fucking, he was the Jeff Foxworthy of that shit at the time. Like, he was the fucking guy that when you started going down to Dothan, Alabama, and, you know, Kansas City and all those kind of places, they all knew Bernie. He was the motherfucker that was on tour. Everybody else was doing clubs, they was doing TV, and, you know, and they were doing the chains, you know. So, yeah, Steve was certainly selling out, you know, Funny Bones and Zanies and all that type of shit, and was probably doing some theater dates. But Bernie was the guy at that time who was on the road, on the regular, fucking doing 4,000 or 5,000 seat houses. Yeah. Damn.
Without his Fox show, right?
Yeah, that was all before the Bernie Mac show. That was before the fucking TV show, right? So, yeah, man, it was an interesting time, you know? Interesting time.
Oh, yeah. Real quick, I was going to ask you, when you said earlier that Chris Rock was acting like your manager back in the day, was that with Mary Wong or is that?
No, that was with Mary Wong. Yeah. Yeah, he was like, I'm going to manage you guys. Yeah, so.
Were you bringing the pain?
Yeah. So it was an interesting year. You know, Chris is a very ambitious dude, man. You know, if you actually look at his track record career wise, you know, he's certainly got the stand up thing. But, you know, he's gotten to a place where he's been doing plays. Now he's directing movies. He's writing, you know, trying to produce other shows. He's always been like that. But the thing is that, you know, just getting to a place where you can get some fucking body to take the meeting. Because when you're a guy like Chris and the thing you do is this brilliant stand up, they don't give a fuck about you being in a play or doing some acting or a fucking movie. They want you to do that. They're like, okay, we'll put you in a movie, but are you going to do the exact same thing that you do when you're doing your stand up, but your name is going to be, you know, Rick? Because if so, then we'll put you in the fucking movie. Like, and that's not what he wanted to do in films. You know, he's actually put a lot of work and effort into, you know, working his craft as an actor and, you know, trying to become a director and all that kind of shit. Yeah, but even when you're making that type of dough, when you got that fucking, you know, you're the king of comedy and stand up, you know, they're not trying to fucking make you an actor if you want to act. They're like, you want to go do that shit that you was doing over there, but we're just going to film you while you're doing it and your name's going to be Charlie. It's fine. We'll put you in the fucking movie, you know. So, yeah. But no, he's a very ambitious guy, man. Always trying to find a new, fresh thing to do. Artist.
I met him one time when he was actually working on Bringing the Pain. We were hanging out in the back of Pink Dots, and he passed by, and he wanted to talk to one of the comedians that was with us. And before, that's funny because he introduced himself to me and the other comedians first. Hey, man, I'm Chris Rock. Man, we know who the fuck you are.
Right.
And then I didn't fuck around, man. Let me get your autograph right now.
Right.
And he gave me the autograph right there, Chris Rock. I still have it. And then he went to go do that bit about Bringing the Pain. Yeah, when it was first starting out, we were in the back just watching it.
Yeah.
Form.
I was with Chris, Mary Wong. We were working with Chris in San Diego at I forget what the fucking club is down there.
Fourth and B.
No, it wasn't that one. But on the day of the OJ chase, that's we all working in San Diego together because we were watching because the Knicks game was on. And so we would watch the game before the show started, and then that shit bloop, and then it was fucking car chase, and we had to do a show that night. Yeah, so that's and that was before Bring the Pain and all the shit that he ended up doing about OJ, and you know, I ain't saying he did it, but I understand all that shit, right? Yeah, so we were all together around that time, man. Interesting time.
What's up, fool?
What's up, fool?
I love shitting the right here, name man, with Ali Leroy.
Ali, look at him. I got all the L's in this time.
I have to look down and read it.
I miss you saying it the other way.
Ali Leroy. Ali Leroy.
See, here's the thing, though.
I was saying like that the whole time, even though the first time I met you, Ali Leroy.
See, but here's what's important. See, you can say that, and I'm good with you saying that because that's your shit. Right? I know there's no fucking disrespect there. That's your shit. Like, Bernie used to call me Ali.
Ali. As a woman.
That was, he always fucking pronounced my name like he's Ali. Like, two names.
Come over here, let me talk to you for a minute.
Look, see, there you go, man. Now, if you get the Ali part down, that fucking, it'd be ghost time for me. I'd be freaking the fuck out over here. So that's your shit, man, and I'll always know that that's hell you, yeah. Right? You do the double L, then it's like I don't know if that's him or not. That's not Felipe. That could be Ali Roy,
bro.
See, that shit rolls off your tongue. Like I can't even say that.
You gotta roll your R, bro.
Yes, that's your shit.
What's up, fool? I have upcoming shows. February 20, Los Angeles at Club Nokia. Two shows, 9:30 p.m. Show is sold out, without a showrunner. 7 p.m. show at it, and tickets still available. February 25th to the 28th, I'm going to Cleveland.
Yes.
I'm going to Hilarities. March 3rd through the 6th, Irvine Improv. March 17th through the 20th, Tempe Improv.
Tempe.
All tickets. Huh? Oh, it's Tampa. Okay, my bad. March 17th and 26th, Tampa, Ybor City. We're back.
You know Tampa and Tempe is really fucking far apart.
Yeah, man, it's totally different towns. One has cigars, one has blunts. I'll take links and info at FelipeSWorld.com/tour. So LA's going to be your home forever?
Yes.
Forever,
I'm
ever, ever.
Fucking, yeah, and no shows for me, man. Yeah, I'm going to do that. I'm going to stick with this TV shit, man.
When I saw you at the Arsenio Hall thing, when I met you, I said, oh, cool, wait, this guy's a writer. And I always like everybody in the office and everybody working. I saw Hugh Moore typing.
Right.
And I'm thinking, this is a cool job. But now I was talking to you. I said, wow, man, those jobs don't last, I guess.
Dude, it's about you. You got to keep, you know, it's a different muscle to work. You know, just like you got to keep working your act. I got to keep doing this. I got to keep trying to come up with shit. Sometimes you take a job, you know, with somebody. You know, you got to go in and fucking sell yourself and get on somebody's show. Or you got to keep trying to come up with your original shit and see if you can go and sell that. I am a showrunner, but they don't necessarily give a fuck about every idea I have. So, yeah, man, it's just, you know... It's your funny, your creativity, your art, all that shit. You know, whether it's on the stage with the fucking mic at the typewriter, whatever it is, you got to fucking work it. You got to keep hitting it. You got to know what the fuck you're trying to do with yourself. And you can't get knocked out the box just because somebody didn't, you know, they wasn't digging you just yet. Yeah, fuck you. I know I'm funny. I get there. Don't worry about it.
It wasn't time, bro. Who'd you tell somebody that's trying to be a showrunner?
Stop. Just go do something else.
Cold hard truth.
Huh? Yeah. Look, here. This is actually my favorite saying. I came up with this. If somebody wants to get in the show business, don't try and help them. Try and stop them. If you can stop them, they don't belong in this shit.
That's right, bro.
That's all this shit is, motherfuckers telling you no. No, 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 you can't be in my club. No, I don't want you to fucking go on tour with me. No, I don't want your TV show. No, I don't fucking want you to be in my movie. No, I don't want you to fucking be on my TV. No, I don't want you to write. No, no, leave me the fuck alone. No, quit fucking me, sending me fucking ideas on Facebook. No, no. As soon as they stop, good. All right, that's one down.
I just gotta stop this other 6 billion motherfuckers and I can go to sleep.
Army of strangers and shit.
I got a fresh new idea.
No, you can't have a podcast. Hey man, what's my man DJ Khaled? He's right. They don't want you to have a podcast, man. They don't want you to have a System of a Down t-shirt. Can't believe it. Don't believe it, man. Motherfucker, who knew that DJ Khaled was going to be the guy? He's the motherfucker, like, he's the most inspirational motherfucker ever.
How did he become so famous in memes? What did he do?
I don't know, man.
That little face, huh?
He was at home.
Yeah?
He was at home with a phone and had an idea, and he ran with it. He's like, this Snapchat's pretty cool. I'm just going to use it for everything. They don't want you to eat fruit. They don't want you to have a plant. Bless up. Cloth talk.
I remember there was a car chase here in L.A. 4 years ago.
They don't want you to be in a car chase.
And the guy was Serbian, or he was an Armenian. He was a Russian. He was a Middle Eastern-looking guy.
That's a lot of motherfuckers.
He was a guy with a big nose.
You're the type of dude that makes it difficult when motherfuckers commit a crime, and then, like, a whole neighborhood gets taken down.
Give us a description.
Serbian, Armenian, Russian, I don't know.
He was Syrian.
Well,
it was a car chase, right? And the news broke out. It's DJ Khaled. It was a Ferrari, a guy in a Ferrari or Lamborghini driving fast. And that was the word went out. It was DJ Khaled, but it wasn't really him.
It wasn't him. He didn't want to be in a car chase.
It would have been me, bro. How could I get all those likes? So what's up, fool? It was Ali Roy, people. Showrunner in the house.
I love it.
Showrunner.
This is the best.
Rodrigo, you want to be a showrunner, bro?
Hey, who knows, though?
I'm going to be the showstopper, bro.
Right?
How many black showrunners do you know besides Lee Daniels?
Well, now there's a few more. And there's ones that you aren't aware of because they aren't, like, high profile. Of course, there's Shonda Rhimes. There's Mara Brock Akil. Myself, you know, Lee Daniels, technically a showrunner, although he's not a writing showrunner. You know, so he's not the guy that's there every week. Because that's the woman. Oh fuck! They used to do the L word. I forget her name. So she's actually the day-to-day showrunner on that show. Although Lee Daniels created there. There's Kenya Barris on Blackish. There's a woman who you don't know by name, face, very low profile, called Pam Vise, and she is showrunner on, like, I think it was NCIS. I think it's an NCIS show that she's a showrunner on. So there's a handful. Chris Spencer is the showrunner on the Kevin Hart thing on BET.
Husbands and Wives?
The real Husbands of Hollywood, yeah. Let's see. There's a new show out. There's a woman named Jackie McKinley. She's just got a show on TV1 called Here We Go Again. Now there's a handful, like, and I'm just hitting the ones that are right on the top of my head, but I would say now there's maybe two dozen, you know, on various levels, different shows that are kind of sprinkled around. All the shows aren't, you know, don't necessarily have all the name and the cachet, but they're out there. There's John Ridley, of course, he's on American Crime, that's his show. So yeah, there's definitely a few out there now. A lot more than like 8 years ago, right? So it's, you know, it's there, and TV does a lot better than film.
Yeah,
TV's doing a lot better with just having diverse writers' rooms, you know, diverse creators, because there's so many niche markets. You know, there's a whole channel of black people. There's a whole channel of Latino people. You know, so it's like we got to get fucking somebody to translate for us. So there's more of it. So it's better now than it was, but again, it's nowhere near as good as it should be. It's just not. So, you know, they're working on it, I guess.
What's up, fool? Well, thank you very much for being our guest, Ali Roy.
Hell yeah.
You're awesome, bro.
I love
it. Now
that.
I know one showrunner.
Right.
I'm not going to get pulled again to that stumbling block. I'm going to go, listen, motherfucker, I know a showrunner ready right now, bro. He knows my whole act. Right. He's seen my whole act.
I've seen the act, man. There's a showrunner. Don't tell me we got to find a showrunner. There's lots of showrunners. You mean to tell me if we went on TV right now and said, I need a showrunner, that nobody would show up? That's what you're trying to yeah. tell me. That if we went to fucking, we got the Rolodex from the agents and we said, look, we need a showrunner. You mean to tell me that nobody would come? Some people would come. Okay, then it's not that we need a showrunner. What the fuck is it? Just tell me the truth. That's all.
Rodrigo, what you got?
What's the truth?
Nothing. Just chilling, man. Fuck, you know.
You got nothing to add?
Yeah, we mentioned in the beginning, but please come out, Ontario Improv, March 17th. It's going to be with Armando Cosillo, Flaco, if he's still alive, PK Flacco. Hosting, and Chris Storin.
Also, man, the Club Nokia, this is the show. It's going to be Marcella, Rodrigo Torres, Johnny Sanchez, and me. We Hell got yeah. Joe Diaz right here calling.
Your phone just lit up, Joey D. It's Coco, right?
Hell yeah.
What's up, Joey? We're doing the podcast right now. What's up? Yeah, I'm doing the show in Nokia on February 20th. All right.
Tell him I say what's up, man.
Al Leroy says what's up, bro. He says what's up, bro.
Send him my love.
You know, last time I saw Joey was actually on a podcast with Felicia Michaels. We were
Beauty and the Beast?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's right.
Yeah.
He said the last time we talked to you was on Beauty and the Beast with Felicia Michaels. All right.
Good old
I'll
love.
Call you, bro.
See if Joey knows any showrunners.
Right.
Like it's the real shit.
That's right, cocksuckers. Tell him, send him my love. So you got any shows coming up? You want to promote anything?
Survivor's Remorse is on the Stars Network. We are in production right now. So look for that on Stars in, I think, August. That'll be coming on right before or after the show Power. That's on. And, like, that's the main thing. I got a podcast, man, but I'm not going to talk about it right now. Because we haven't done episodes in a while. Maybe I'll get you over there.
With Owen Smith?
You and Owen Smith?
Yeah, me and Owen Smith. Alias Smith and Leroy. So look that up on iTunes.
I will.
Yeah, yeah. Alias Smith and how do you pronounce my name?
Leroy, bro.
Oh, but see, no, see,
Al Leroy.
Right, see, there
Al
you
Leroy.
Go.
Al Leroy. Al Leroy.
What? Hell yeah, man.
That's like the coolest fucking thing. I love that, man. I love it.